Last week we said a few things about relationships, and I said that I was going to focus that week and this week on marriage and the challenges it brings, and hopefully we can find a way to deal with our challenges better. And I mentioned that in a research that I read, the number one reason why people were not able to survive their marriages, people divorced, was lack of commitment. Lack of commitment. 79% of people say it's lack of commitment. And the second highest reason is too much argument. Too much argument. I'm not sure what they mean by too much, but I suppose when you say too much, it's too much. So too much argument. It means that almost every time they're arguing, something is not going right. So today, that's what I'm going to focus on. Last week I talked about commitment, and today I'm going to deal with too much argument. So my subtitle for relationships would be Values and Expectations. Values and Expectations. Why do people argue so much? Why do couples argue? Now, anybody who is married or being married will tell you that it's a reality that in every marriage there is argument. As a matter of fact, if there is no argument, I will become very suspicious of the marriage. It means that people are not being themselves. Because if people are going to be themselves, there will be argument. The fact that one is a male and the other is a female is enough grounds for argument. The fact that you were raised in different families is enough grounds for argument. But there are some other things that enlarge the arguments and make it very difficult for people to resolve their differences. Amos chapter 3 verse 3 says, can two walk together unless they are agreed? It's a question. Can two walk together unless they are agreed? Now, if we made it a statement instead of a question, it would be, two cannot walk together unless they are agreed. So, if you're going to walk with somebody, you're a young man, you see a lady, and you say, these days I hear they say, I want to go out with you. You know, stay indoors, but they always want to go out. So, I want to go out with you. So, they say, we are going out. So, if you want to go out with somebody, and you want to consider that that person is going to be a life partner, you have to deal with agreement or lack of it. Now, there are two important things that influence our agreement or lack of it, or fuel arguments. The first one is values. Everybody say values. Values are the things that are very important to you. Just by the name, you know what it means. It means that it's something you treasure very much. And each one of us have values. We have things that are very important to us. But because we were raised differently, what is important to me may not be important to you. So, because we all value our values, it is very difficult to compromise on your values because they are your values. Something that is very important to you, you don't give up on it very easily. So the first thing that really fuels arguments in marriages are values. And it's important that when we get into any relationship, especially in marriage, that we look at the values, especially before you marry. But sometimes, you know, the love can be so strong. The chemistry is stronger than common sense. You know, so the laboratory is working all over us and we can't think. So by the time we get to values, we have said, I do already. And then the values begin to trouble us. But values are very important, and I'm going to talk a bit on that. And the second reason why we argue most in marriage is unmet expectations. Unmet expectations. In a sense, values and unmet expectations work together, but they're also different. You know, an expectation is what you are looking forward to. What you are looking forward to. Then there is something called reality. Reality is where you are. Expectation is where you want to be. The gap between expectation and reality, that's where arguments occur. So in every relationship, there is expectation. Your own expectations and your expectation of the person you have gone to marry. So you meet the person and you have expectations. Oh, this will be a great relationship. We'll get on. We'll be sitting on our porch and we'll be swinging on our porch and we'll have a nice dog and we'll be very happy. And I can see, you know, expectations. We paint all these expectations. And these days, because of the media, we watch TV, we watch series, telenovelas, we have expectations of marriage. And then reality sets in. So, now, normally you are not sure, should I pursue my expectation or should I settle with the reality? Now, so in between reality and expectation is a space for arguments. So, the values, conflicting values, unmet expectations. Now, where do we get our values from? We get our values from many places, from our home, definitely how you were brought up. The way I was brought up is very different from the way my wife was brought up. Your home, you get your values. If you were born in a very rich family, your values would be very different from if you were born from a very poor family. Values would be very different. If you're born in a family of 10 people, your values would be different from a family of 3. If you were raised in a compound house, your values would be different from somebody who is raised in a house all by themselves. Your language is defined by your experiences. And so the way you are brought up will determine your values. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but that's your values. That's how it is. So, for example, if you have somebody who is raised in a home where they spend a lot of money, there's big spending, they are not afraid of money. You know, there are people who are not afraid of money. Your father will tell you, I don't fear money. I don't fear money. So that's how you've been raised. You don't fear money. And you say money is supposed to be used. And then somebody who's been raised in a home where they fear money. Because they don't have it. And when one comes, they hold on to it for a very long time. And so the two of them marry. They have a limited salary. One doesn't fear money. The other fears money. There will be argument. And it's not because they are good people or bad people. It's simply that their values are different. The values are different. They've been raised differently. Not by their fault. That's the reality. We get values from our homes. We get values from our school. And by school, I mean the level of education. The level of education will create values for you. Then our spiritual beliefs, church, the kind of church we went to, create values. So if you went to a church where you were raised up believing that the devil is under every chair, every cockroach you meet is an assignment from the devil, and we have to cast it out in the name of Jesus. That's your values. You feel that you have to do spiritual warfare. So you, all your life there is warfare. You're fighting spiritually. And then somebody who's grown up in a place where he's been taught his principles, 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 principles. So you say, well, it's spiritual. We have to cast out demons. No, it's principles. There's principles. Now, the two have different values, and they got it from different churches. So if you're from Central Gospel Church and you go to marry somewhere, be careful. Because you are being given different values here. Your pastor is not going to tell you that there are demons out there and then that cockroach in your house, watch it, that's the devil now. I'm going to teach principle, 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 and somebody saying demon, 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 and of all the girls in this church, you decided to go to demon, demon, demon. All right, so there'll be different values. I'm not saying you shouldn't marry, but get this in your head that your values will be different. So just on the basis of how to deal with your problems, should you bind it or principle it? you're going to have problems. You're going to have problems. And you have to deal with these things. And then we have our own personal preferences, which it's a composition of so many things, our personalities, our temperaments, our own choices in life. All of these develop our values. So let's look at some values that are important to look at in marriage. I mean, we have to look at our spiritual values. And the most fundamental spiritual value is whether a person considers Jesus Christ the Lord of their lives or not. That is rock bottom. That is fundamental. If you're going to marry somebody and you say that Jesus is your Lord, it's important that your Lord is their Lord as well. Because if Jesus is your Lord, but something else or someone else is their Lord, at that level, you're going to have serious conflict because you are submitting to two different authorities. So you have to ask yourself spiritually, do we submit to the same Lord? Is Jesus the Lord of my life and the Lord of the life of this person I love so much? You have to consider the whole issue of respect, which I talked about yesterday. Do you appreciate and accept each other without reservation? You accept each other without reservation. There's no but. I like you, but I don't like that about you. I love you, but that. It's without reservation. Because if you respect people conditionally, when that condition does not exist, the respect will go. So do you respect me? Do you respect the lady you want to marry unconditionally? Do you think you are doing a favor to the person? I'm marrying you because I have pity on you. You know, or a man who looks at a woman and says, I want to bring her up. Bring her up. Now, if you want to bring something up, go buy a dog. Get a dog. Because you can bring up a dog the way you want. You don't bring up another person. It's an equal relationship. It's a relationship of equality. If you think you are too high for her, don't marry her. If you think you're too high for him, go and get your level. But don't go and marry somebody because you think the person elicits pity from you, and you are there to improve the life of the person and give him an opportunity. I want to give her opportunity. You don't marry somebody to give them opportunity. You marry them because you love them and you respect them unconditionally. So if the values at the respect level is not there, you're going to have some serious arguments later. Then relationships, your values on relationship. Now, I'm saying this particularly because of us Ghanaians and most Africans. When we say family, there are different definitions of family. So you have to find out who is more important to you, your spouse, parents, siblings, friends. In order of hierarchy, who comes first, who comes second? These are values that have to be sorted out. Now, there may be relationships where one person says, as for me, when I marry, it's me and my wife, that's it. And that's his value. To him, his marriage is he and his wife. To the wife, his marriage is my brother. I have to take care of my brothers because we are all alone. Our parents are dead and I'm the elder sister. And if I don't take care of my brother, the family will not get on. So I'm not saying it's wrong. What I'm saying is they are approaching it from totally different values. So whilst one thing that he's going to build a relationship with a spouse, the other person says, I'm going to use my marriage to help my family to be upgraded. So there's going to be some arguments there. Relationships. Financial responsibility. Do you value living within your means, paying bills on time, and saving on a regular basis? Some people don't value savings because they believe the Bible says, give us this day our daily bread. So God will provide. Let's just believe God. Let's go. Tomorrow God will provide. So the money comes, they spend it, believing that tomorrow God will provide. Now, I'm not operating at that level of faith, so I cannot criticize your faith. At my level of faith, I believe that you must save. That's my level of faith. But some of you are way advanced. Way advanced. You are in the seventh heavens of your faith, so you walk every day. God supplies your needs. But if you're going to marry somebody who believes that way, you're going to have some value issues. Generosity, giving, especially when it comes to church. Do you believe in regularly giving a part of your income to the church or to those in need? Do the two of you share the same values? Do you appreciate tenderness? Are you both compassionate? Are you both willing to help people? And several things. Integrity. Do you like to say and do what is true to who you are? What are your values on integrity? What are your values on peace? Do you cherish times of tranquility without conflict or chaos? And the big one, what are your values on marriage? Do you see marriage as a lifelong covenant? Not everybody sees it that way. Some people believe, yeah, it's good, but if it's hard, get out. So you can marry somebody whose values on marriage are not the same as yours. Do you appreciate confronting and dealing with difficult issues? These are values you have to deal with. Now, when it comes to marriage, there are four areas that create the most conflict. The most conflict and the most arguments. The four areas. Number one area is making time for each other. Making time for each other. If you hear couples arguing, a lot of the argument is about making time for each other. You don't have time for me. I don't have time for you. You spend time too much on the TV. You don't talk to me when I'm around. You're on the phone all the time. You're texting all the time. We don't have time together. A lot of the arguments are about time, making time for each other. And remember, the reason we argue about making time for each other is because we have different values about making time for each other. The second major area for conflict is the big M, money. How to manage it, what to do with it. The third big area for argument in marriages is how to raise the children, how to raise the kids. Now, the reason this is very major is because all of us want to raise our children based on how we have been raised, with little variation. You think your mother's style of raising you was the best. Your father's style of raising you was the best. Your family was the best. All of us feel that way. I believe my mother was the best. But my mother is not my wife's mother. So what I consider the best may not be the best for her. So when it comes to raising children, I want to raise children the way I was raised or the way I believe children should be raised. My wife will have a totally different view. And just based on those, there's going to be a lot of argument. There's going to be a lot of argument. And it's all based on values, expectations, and unmet expectations. And the fourth major area is external relationships. Parents, siblings, friends. And what to do with them. Although most married people, when you want to do a marriage seminar, most people want to hear about sex. Because people, somehow we make it a big issue, but if you look at almost all the research, it's not a major area of problem. It's not. I'm not saying it's not important. It's important, but it's not the major area of conflict. So instead of making that your major area where you go to marriage seminars and all you want to hear is about how to have sex and how to do that, how to dress for your husband and how to dress for your wife, it may sound nice, it may tintillate your ears, but it doesn't really play a major role in the peace of your home. There are far more important things that we have to engage ourselves and our minds on. Making time for each other. Now, there are seven stages in most marriages. Most marriages. And it may not work sequentially. It may work overlapping each other. But there are about seven major stages. The first stage, most of us know it, is the passion stage. Passion stage. And when you are at the passion stage, there is a lot of physical energy, excitement, there is a lot of sex, there is a lot of intimacy, and you're spending time together, and life looks great. Normally, it may be about the first 2 weeks of your marriage. For some people, it's the first 2 hours. And after that, they go to stage number two because, you know, the arguments come in very quickly. There are people who spend their whole honeymoon arguing and fighting. And you see what your mother did at the wedding and what your father did at the wedding. And you see they didn't like the wedding the way I was looking at your aunt, her eyes. Now I know the aunt had terrible eyes at the wedding, but honeymoon is for passion. Lock up all the arguments. There will be a good time when you can argue properly, and I will show you how to do that. But there is a passion stage for regularly in most marriages. It's probably about the first couple of years of your marriage, all things being equal, although it doesn't always work that way. There are marriages that the trouble starts before the wedding, and right after the wedding, it continues through honeymoon and on and on and on. But regularly, generally speaking, the first couple of years of most people's marriages is the passion stage. At that time, just the two of them, and they're enjoying each other, the time they have for each other. Normally when they do that, pregnancy will come. It's a byproduct. And then the passion stops. Because from that time on, vomiting and other things still come in. And the passion has now moved on to a different stage. But passion stage is a great stage. Now, when you are at that stage, thank God for it. And cherish every memory. Because you're going to need it. Somewhere along the line, when you're about 5 years, 6 years down the line, remember the passion stage. Because the passion stage, God is creating memories for you. Memories to sustain you. To help you know how beautiful this thing can be, how cherished, how fulfilling it can be. So when you go through the valley, you remember the mountaintop. So enjoy the passion stage and by all means make time for it. And if you can prolong it to be 5 years, make it 5 years. But sooner or later, reality will set in. So from passion stage, you go to the realization stage. At the realization stage, you begin to realize it's not as sweet as I thought. The mistakes are beginning to pop up. Strengths and weaknesses are beginning to show up. You're beginning to realize the different values that both of you have and the conflict in the values. And at this time, you're beginning to be aware of yourself and the other person, and you're beginning to realize you're not really as one as you thought. It's a stage. It's not the end. Although when you go through this stage in your marriage, you may think you've hit the end, but it is not the end. At this stage, the most important thing you need to do is to develop good communication habits, and I'll talk a bit about that later on. Learning to listen, learning to confide in each other, expanding your understanding and trust of each other, doing a lot of forgiving, because there's going to be a lot of offense at this stage. Then from the realization stage, the third stage is the rebellion stage. This is the time when people want to be independent. And normally in most marriages it happens maybe around the 6th, 7th, 8th year. By that time, people want to have their own lives. They want to assert themselves. There is a power struggle. If it's a young couple, at this time, they're growing in their careers, granting they married probably late 20s, by the 7th, 8th year, they're in their mid-30s, wherever they are working, the wife is getting promoted, the husband is getting promoted, they are beginning to see a lot of fulfillment in their work, and as they see fulfillment in their work, their individual life begins to assert itself over their corporate life in the home. And there, you may find a lot of rebellion going on. Because then people begin to hold on to their things, their stuff, their space, their place. It is just a stage. And at this stage, the arguments are going to be very high. You're going to learn to negotiate. You have to learn to empathize, keep promises, build trust. Start working through differences. Because from the rebellion stage, if it is handled well, you go to the cooperation stage. This is the time when you begin to realize it's better to work together than to work against each other. By this time, in most marriages, the marriage is traveling about 15 years, and you're beginning to learn to cooperate. You fought so much, you're tired of fighting. Now you realize it's better we build together than to fight each other. Then from there you go to the reunion stage. This is when, all things being equal, if you have children, they have left. They've grown and they have left, the two of you. And this is the time when you can recapture year one, passion, all over again. Now, if the marriage was built well, this is going to be a sweet time in your marriage, because you really recapture, because you've learned to fight and fight fair. You've learned to argue and argue well. You know each other. You know each other's weaknesses. Now you are left alone. It's almost like a second chance to marry. And it can be a great time if it's harnessed well. From there you go to another stage where things begin to happen. As you grow older, definitely there are going to be things happening, health issues that you have to deal with, parenting, career, people are going on retirement. It's called the explosion stage. Explosion stage. If at this time you haven't really planned well, then things can get explosive. You know, there are many times people will survive marriage for a very long time, and then when you think they shouldn't divorce, they divorce. When they should have, they didn't. When they shouldn't, they do. And normally it's about this stage, because there's so much transition taking place in their lives. And the final stage is what is called a completion stage. All things being equal, it will happen when you are 100 years old. Now, all these stages are there, and they may not happen in sequence one after the other. Sometimes some come ahead of others. Sometimes they overlap. Sometimes they blend up. At any of these stages, there will be major challenges in a relationship. And each stage will produce its own unmet expectations, its own arguments. Now let's talk a bit about divorce. Now, why do people divorce? I'm not saying what caused it, but why do they do it? Because people think they are unhappy. And yes, they are unhappy. But I've read quite a number of research. And the research shows clearly that people who divorce don't become happy after divorce. They don't. If anything, they are as unhappy as they were before. And I will just share some of those research findings with you. The research has found, and this is a research that was done in the University of Chicago, that two-thirds of unhappily married couples, two-thirds of unhappily married couples, not happily married, unhappy married couples, who stayed married, reported that their marriages were happy 5 years later. Two-thirds. So people who were going through a situation, and at the time of the research, they said, I'm unhappy, this thing is bad for me, I'm not getting on. Who stayed? 5 years later, the same group, two-thirds of them, So if it's 100, about 70 of them are saying, we are happy now, 5 years later. So the question you always ask is, what happened? Why did they become happy? Well, the researchers found that endurance solves problems. Because a lot of the problems people face, they are stage problems. It's a stage. And if you endure, that stage will go away. It will just come to pass. But many times, people are not able to endure. Because when they are in a stage, it appears as if the situation is permanent. And it's not going to change. So with the passage of time, many of the sources of conflict and distress eased up. If it was financial, maybe they get better jobs, money increases, and now you don't have to argue over 10 cities and 20 cities, you know. So the tension is gone. If it is about job, maybe they get a better job. If it's about the children, maybe the children have grown up. And all of a sudden, the things which were distressing the relationship are gone. They are gone. So just endurance. Endurance. Then I'm not saying by that when your husband or your wife is violent and is beating you up, endure it. That's not what I'm saying. The man pulls a knife on you, that's a different issue. But I'm saying, well, we are talking about problems, arguments, people are arguing over all kinds of things. Just by enduring, 5 years later, the same group, 70% of the people say, we are happy now. We are happy now. So, if you're going to get married, it's important that endurance becomes part of your commitment. Now, for all of you young people who marry, and in 2 years, you are fed up with each other. 2 years. You're supposed to be passionately in love with each other. But 2 years problem. So you go and marry somebody else, and you forget that marriage will also be 2 years. Because people are people. People are people. Women are women. Men are men. They are people. There's no great man anywhere. There's no phenomenal woman anywhere. They are all people. They are all people. The thing is, sometimes you postpone your learning curve. So you learn with somebody for 5 years and you leave them and go and start learning from year one with somebody else. Like somebody who went to class five and then resigned and went to class one again. And then this one, you get to class four, you get tired, you say, I'm going to start class again. When are you ever going to graduate? But just sticking. So the research found out that just enduring helps people to get over. The second reason why in 5 years most of those couples were happy was because they put in effort. I know some of you are saying, what about the effort? Now it's here, point two. Effort. They worked on it. They tried to solve problems better, learned to argue better. They changed their behavior. They improved communication. They went for marriage counseling. They were mentored by another couple. And all of a sudden, as they put in the effort, they started seeing the results. And the third reason why they said they were happy was that they realized nobody can make them happy except themselves. So they decided to make themselves happy. They changed their attitude. Instead of expecting somebody to make them happy, they tried to build their own happiness, which does not include having an affair. Building their own happiness. Some started getting involved in either personal development. They went to school, got a degree, got an advanced degree, and all of a sudden they realized they were happier. Because part of the unmet expectation is when you think your wife will make you happy or your husband will make you happy. I know that we expect to be happy in our marriage, but there is so much your wife can do to make you happy. There's so much that your husband can do to make you happy. At the point, you have to create your happiness. You have to be happy yourself. Get on with your life. Smile. Enjoy life. Because no human being can be your source of happiness. No human being. For us Christians, we know our source of true happiness is our relationship with God. And when we plug into the Lord and we grow spiritually, we have inner peace and we have true happiness and joy. But loading your wife with that responsibility is unfair. Because she cannot make you absolutely happy. You have to learn to make yourself happy. So these people got on simply because they endured. Some of them put in effort. And some of them just decided, I'm going to make myself happy. And their lives became better. The great evangelist, Billy Graham, was asked what was the secret of his marriage. And Billy Graham's wife is called Ruth. And this is after they had been married for over 54 years. But they married for more than that, for more than 60 years before the wife died. But after they had been married for about 54 years, he was asked why was he happy, or was the source of their happiness, the secret of their love. And this is what Billy Graham said. He says, Ruth and I are happily incompatible. Happily incompatible. It means we have our differences, but we are happy. Why do you want to marry somebody who is just like you? What a boring life. Happily incompatible. And I think that's what we should aim at. Happily incompatible. To the extent where you can look at the difference and laugh over it. I'm sure Billy Graham and his wife argued. Because any marriage without argument, in my estimation, is abnormal. So do I argue with my wife? Oh, yeah, we do. We do. We argue a lot. Some very lovingly. Sweetheart, this is not what I meant. I meant it different. That's not. And then the other one's heated. I need to get my point across. This is it. We argue. Oh, yeah, we argue. But we are happily incompatible. Happily incompatible. And we've come to learn to think back over the argument and laugh over them. Because sometimes when you really look at the reasons why you argue, you yourself, you know you are not thinking. There's going to be arguments. There's going to be arguments. But it doesn't have to be full-time job. Where you're arguing all the time. Everything is an argument. The color is blue. No, it's red. It's blue. It's red. Blue. Red. Blue. Red. Blue. Red. Blue. And you people, you like red too much. You like red too much. All right. Let me ask you a question. What is the difference between street fight? You know street fight? Where people are, you know, maybe around Agbogbloshie Junction, someone say, hey, you've done this, you've done that, and then they pick up fight and start fighting, street fight. What's the difference between street fight and boxing? Both of them are fights. What's the difference? Rules. Rules. That's what makes the difference. Boxing is a fight. You get paid for it. Street fight is a fight. You get jailed for it. But they are all fights. So, there's going to be argument. There will be fights. But in marriage, we don't do street fighting. We do boxing. And there are going to be rules. And you know that in boxing, you box in a ring. You don't box everywhere. You have to define your space. Because if you're arguing, recently our children were telling us, we've never seen you fight or argue before. I said, wow. I was amazed. They've lived with us for so long. They said, We never heard you quarrel, never heard you argue, but we argue in a ring. It's in a ring. You have to define not to take the fight out. The problem with most of us, we don't know where to fight. We are fighting in the car, we are fighting outside, even at the church compound. You get up from the car park, hey, and then you get here, I love you, Lord. You have to define your space. In boxing, they fight in a defined space. And they wear gloves so that the blows will land soft. And they don't keep fighting. They fight for 3 minutes. Then they break. And everybody goes to his corner to think. What should I do next? And after they go through all the rounds of fighting, they stop. There has to be some rules. You don't hit below the belt. No matter how angry you are, there are some words you must never use in an argument. You are arguing over your values, not over personality. It's not because the other person is stupid, excuse me to say, or foolish. It's simply because they have a different point of view which they treasure. Because that is all they know. Now the two of you want to come to the middle. You cannot use that to say the person doesn't think. Because when you say you don't think, you are hitting below the belt. And it's not allowed. You have to define your language. If you can argue without insult, you will do fine. If you can argue without trying to bring the other person down and diminish the person and demean the person and disgrace the person, you will do fine. When people say we argue too much, it's because there's no ring and there's no duration and people are fighting dirty. And that's the same person you're going to marry. You're married to the person. You're going to live your life with. Why do you want to damage him and live with him? You have to have rules of engagement. I'm not saying that in your marriage, definitely go and get a sheet and say, you know, let's write the rules from now. No, and most of these rules are unspoken rules. You don't insult. And if there's anything, I just want to encourage everybody. If insult is part of your language, using words like stupid, foolish, senseless, you are an idiot, you are whatever, these words should never, never become part of your vocabulary. Never. Never, 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 never. You can say, I don't like it. I don't agree with that. I don't like it. But never, 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 never. And if you were raised with values like that, you have to really ask God to help you to change your language. Because the argument that destroys marriage is not the argument, it is the low blows. And in boxing, you can't do that. In boxing, you can't bite. You can't spit on people. Mike Tyson tried it and he lost. You'll be disqualified. You don't bite people's ears. You give people chance to regroup. And one of the things I've seen about boxing is no matter how severe the fight is, afterwards they come together, embrace. Because they're really not enemies. Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali, who were in the ring, enemies, were the best of friends. Two great friends. Much of what they were doing in public was just to raise their money, the purse, so they could share it, you know. We thought they were fighting. They were just raising the value of the fight and sharing the money. You have to learn to fight clean and argue clean. You have to learn to define what the argument is all about. If it's about money, let's take time and think it through. Let's take time to define, what is it about this argument? What do we want to achieve? What, at the end of this argument, what do we hope will come out? Definitely, the reason you argue about money mostly is because the money is not enough. Let's face it, if there was a lot of money, the arguments would, it wouldn't go away, but it would reduce. But because there's not enough, you have to argue very hard. So why don't you deal with the real problem? Lack of money. Instead of making it, you don't manage the money well, and you don't bring in any money at all. And by the way, in a marriage, everybody's marriage money belongs to the marriage. I'm not saying you don't have a salary slip with your name on it. There is a salary slip with your name on it. But the moment it leaves your office treasury or accounts department and comes into your account, it doesn't belong to you. Well, let me put it this way. It doesn't belong to you alone. It belongs to you, your spouse, and your children. Now, in some marriages, people try to keep one account. I'm not really particular about one account, two accounts, three accounts in your name, in her name, in our name. The important thing is you recognize whatever I bring in is for us. Whatever you bring in is for us. So when we are thinking about our income, we are not thinking about independently. We're thinking about what we do together. And whatever is done in the name of the family is shared. It's for both of you. If my wife pays a bill for the family, she's paid it for the family. If I pay a bill for the family, I've paid it for the family. If we together come together to pay a bill, we paid it for the family. There's no accounting. Do you remember? I've been doing this. I've been doing that. 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 And normally people say, I've been doing that. I've been doing that. Because one person is hiding. Unfortunately, there are people who marry and hide their money. I mean, if you want to hide your money, why do you marry? Just be on your own and keep your money. Why do you marry if you're going to hide your money, hide your food, hide your pomade, hide your soap? You know, sometimes the kind of things people do, you wonder, why did you marry in the first place? You can't share food. You can't just simple food. What can you share if you can't share food? You have to hide your own milk. The milk, your own sardine is in your. It's important that we create frameworks for our argument. I can say, my wife and I, you know, when we were younger in marriage, we had more differences than now. Now we have to search very hard to find a difference, because we've learned how to deal with each other. Issues that would have created an argument doesn't create argument again. Because I've learned the language. I've learned how to ask nicely. And it doesn't create offense. Because sometimes it's just the way you ask or the way you put your point across. But just learning to ask nicely. As a principle, you have to determine the duration of your fights. Because, you know, if you have an argument today and you don't talk today, you will not talk tomorrow. And you will not talk the day after. And you will not talk 3 days after. And sometimes you can find a couple who don't talk for 1 week. Over something that happened a week ago. Now, both of them want to talk. But they are not sure who should talk first. Because somebody must save face. So the thing is kept after a week and 2 weeks. And believe you me, I've done enough marriage counseling to understand this. I've seen marriages go on for 2 years of tension. 3 years. And the source of the thing is some insignificant nothing. But they didn't talk the first day. They didn't talk the second day. They didn't talk the third day. And it becomes a habit. And sometimes, in order to prove that they are independent, the other person that comes back, listens to the TV, and just pretends as if he's enjoying life. And the other person does something else. And they go on and on and on and on and on. In our marriage, we try as much as possible. If there is something we need to talk about, we talk about it now. And that's it. After we talk about it, 2 minutes, we are fine. Hey, there we go. But if we didn't talk about it, it is going to stay. Define the duration of your arguments. If it's 3 minutes, after 3 minutes, reconcile. And some of you need to go home today and talk. And stop pretending that you are enjoying what is going on. You know you're not enjoying it. Just be honest and deal with it. People will ask, so what if all the damage has been done? We've used the wrong language and we've hurt each other. There is something called apology. An apology is when you say, I realize I made a mistake. I am sorry. But say the sorry like you are sorry. Don't say the sorry like you are just saying it to move to the next step. Say it like your story. Now, for a lot of couples, to rebuild broken trust is going to take a long time. But if you really mean it, especially the men, if you've really hurt your wife, and a hurt wife is a totally different entity. If you've really hurt your wife, don't expect that when you say sorry, she'll smile. Women don't smile like that. That's how they are. You say sorry, they say, I say I'm sorry. Because they are not looking for words. They're looking for action. Looking for action. So you say I'm sorry, and she says, It may annoy you, but keep it down. She has heard, but she wants to see, do you really mean it? And for those of you men, especially if you are a man, you go and have an affair outside, and you come and tell your wife, I'm sorry, and she says, Don't say, well, but I'm coming back, and this is the thing you do, and then I go back again. Hey! Are you sorry or you are sorry? Now, if she says, you should be happy, she just said, Because if you want to win her back, it's going to take you time. Maybe 6 months. For the to change to, nice. It's going to take, because you have to prove yourself over and over that you can be trusted. It's not a rush. You're going to work through your process. But when you rebuild trust, you can take it on again. Because sometimes we are in a hurry to reconcile when there are issues that have not really been dealt with. Very painful, hurtful words have been used. You can brush it over. But you can start the process of rebuilding. So today, all I just wanted to let you know is argument is normal. It shouldn't be too much. And there must be rules. And if you define the rules and work with the rules, you will be fine. The argument will not collapse your marriage. It will just help you develop your individualities as people and help you to get on well with each other. God bless you. Amen. Did you get something out of this? Okay. Well, we're going to take our offering. Just want you to give as the Lord has blessed you.
Mm-hmm.